And welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And joining us from Albuquerque, New Mexico, is the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, how have you been?
I've been well, Rob.
Good stuff. Well, we're finally hitting a warm, sunny stretch of weather up here in Toronto, Mickey. As far as the markets are concerned, we're into the dog days of summer. But one of your favorite areas of the commodities trade in the market, and it has been for quite some time, is uranium. You remain a firm bull in this area, and it all comes down to really supply and demand, doesn't it?
It really does, Rob. It's what it's all about, and you're right about summer doldrums, but sometimes in the bottom of the dregs of the dog days of summer is it presents a good buying opportunity. So that's the idea we're going to promulgate this morning.
Okay, well, tell us about the supply-demand situation right now in the market for uranium, Mickey. Do we have supplies keeping up with the demand, or is it the reverse side? Do we have the demand overstating supplies, and that supplies are going to be getting shorter and shorter as time goes by?
Well, right now we actually have a surplus, and that's opposed to a big deficit that we were running pre-Fukushima. For instance, in 2010, there was a 39 million pound deficit in the amount of uranium supplied to the market versus demand. In 2014, there was a 16 million pound surplus. So that accounts for the weakness in prices. However, we have had lots of supply disruptions, delays, even destruction of supply with mine shutdown and new mines not going on with development. So we're projecting a surplus coming in the next couple of years.
Okay, well, we do have reactors planned to come back online in Japan. I think, about 70 others currently under construction around the world, and many more than that certainly on the drawing boards. So as we move forward in the years ahead, Mickey, do we see that a supply deficit perhaps surfacing?
Oh, most definitely, and that's the idea here. Although we have a surplus in 2014, we project that is going to decrease significantly, and so we see a dwindling surplus for 2015. A lot of that has to do with mines being shut down, mines being delayed, developments being delayed. There's been some disruption through minor accidents at mines and processing plants. So analyst consensus is that in a couple of years, let's say late 2016, perhaps end of 2017, what is now a surplus going to turn into a significant deficit. And a lot of that has to do with all the new plants coming on stream. As you say, there's about 66 that are under construction, and on average right now there's a new plant commission, one per month. The Chinese just commissioned one a couple of weeks ago. So this is a contrarian play, and so we're projecting better things ahead for the uranium market in the next couple of years.
Okay. How does the sourcing of much of the uranium come into your bullish view of the market? Kazakhstan, I believe, right now is in the number one spot. It is the biggest producer of uranium. Other countries in the top list, Niger, Russia, doesn't give you necessarily a warm, fuzzy feeling, does it, about the stability of supplies?
Well, it certainly doesn't. Six of the top 10 producers, about well over 60% of 2014 production, was from countries that I would consider unfriendly to the West and or corrupt and unstable governments. And let's just kind of go through the list. Six of the top 10 producers. Well, Kazakhstan was up there at 41%. And the real question is that production sustainable? They've grown that, and they've basically supplied the growing demand, and we do have growing demand of about 4% a year for basically the last decade. But like you say, we got some other countries, and I'll go through the list: Niger, Russia, Uzbekistan, Ukraine, and China. So count that up, 6 of the top 10 producers are not particularly friendly, especially to the United States, but also Europe and Japan, where there's significant demand.
Mm-hmm.
So all in all, the supply looks compromised to me.
Okay, with that in mind then, are uranium producers in Canada and the United States and uranium explorers here ramping up their efforts, knowing full well the story that you just detailed? Is there a concerted effort to beef up supplies from stable areas?
Well, certainly there's an effort. It's not been particularly successful. For instance, the USA uses about one-third of the world's uranium, or let's say 30% every year. Last year we used 51 million pounds, and we produced just right at 5 million pounds, so a little less than 10%. A lot of the uranium we get is from Canada, from the Athabasca Basin.
Mm-hmm.
Our second largest supplier is Australia, but the third largest now is Kazakhstan. And then we also have the Russians supplying something on the order still about 20% of our uranium through light enriched uranium contracts, what essentially has replaced the megatons to megawatts program.
Yeah.
So Canada's not particularly a uranium consuming country. You've
mm-hmm.
got a few reactors, not a lot, but you are very important to our supply to the south, and that course comes from the Athabasca
right.
Basin.
So what's needed then to perhaps make Canada an even bigger supplier to the United States, and perhaps, you know, push Kazakhstan further to the background, and the same thing with Russia? Do we need prices to increase further? And I'll bring up a quote from an Australian publication. One of the uranium industry people down there saying that prices have started to recover somewhat, but not to the level they need for increased production in any substantial way. Do you agree with that?
Well, most definitely. We're still looking at a spot price a little less than $37 a pound. No one makes money at $37 a pound uranium, not even the ISR in-situ recovery producers, of which there are significant numbers of pounds produced in the U.S. in that regard, and also most of Kazakhstan's production is ISR production.
Mm-hmm.
But those mines, or well fields essentially, break even at current spot prices.
Mm-hmm.
We do need higher prices. The long-term contract price, which supplies somewhere on an average maybe about 80% of the world's mined uranium, is supplied via long-term contracts. That varies versus the short-term, which is related to the spot price.
Mm-hmm.
But that price is right at $50, actually $49, $49, $50 a pound right now.
Mm.
But conventional underground mines are pretty high costs, and that's exactly what goes on in the Athabasca Basin. The mines that are developed, I mean, there are open pit mines, but the CapEx required to put those mines in production is tremendous, and the lead times are very long, probably 15 years or more.
Mm. Okay, so what
we do require higher prices. Underground mines are going to require somewhere around $60 to $80 per pound uranium. And so what we really need is low-cost mines,
mm-hmm.
and that really is ISR and open-pit heap leach mines. And candidates for that are basically Kazakhstan, the U.S., Australia,
mm-hmm.
Namibia. But all these countries, all these uranium districts have significant challenges. It's not obvious, and it's not easy in any of them.
What sort of price assumptions are you building into your bullish view of the uranium market? And it's not a short-term bullish view. You're kind of taking a mid- to longer-term view, correct?
Well, it is. It's a mid-term to long-term view. You know, we're going to need a $45 spot price for ISR production to really ramp up in the U.S. Most of the companies that are producing now have long-term contracts, so they're somewhat insulated. But what we need is a higher spot price. If we had a spot price of $45 a pound in the short term with a concomitant long-term price of $60 a pound, you would see significant increases in production. Whether that's going to happen or not, who knows?
Right.
You know, if we get some Japanese restarts, you know, we have 50 operable nuclear power plants in Japan, and we've got zero operating. We're hoping that there'll be two or three that will start up this year. Ultimately, maybe half of those will ever produce electricity again. So that's been really, Fukushima was the real catalyst and the real reason this downturn in uranium happened since 2011.
Right. What about the takeover activity, Mickey? How much credence are you giving to mergers and acquisitions right now in terms of a good strategy to put some money to work in the uranium market? Because I know there's been a bit of a buzz in this sector of the mining world over M&A activity.
Well, that's exactly true, and a lot of my premise is based on the recent M&A activity. You know, we've, especially in domestic U.S. producers, we had Energy Fuels acquired Uraners, which now becomes the second largest producer in the U.S. next to the uranium giant Cameco.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, Uranium Resources, Inc., a NASDAQ-listed company, acquired Anatolia Energy for its ISR project in Turkey, but they are very active in the U.S., mainly in New Mexico and Texas. Another development, Peninsula Energy, an Australian-listed company, but with all its significant operations coming in Wyoming, is going for a market exchange listing in New York. So we see this continued progress amongst the mid-tier developers and small producers, and I expect that to continue. Even in the Athabasca, there's a couple of really significant takeover targets.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if Denison does something here in the next year or so. The Chinese are always snooping about, because the one thing you've got to have with a nuclear power plant, and bear in mind that the cost of uranium in a power plant is probably somewhere around 5% of the total cost of producing a kilowatt hour of electricity. But you need security of supply. You know, you just don't turn on and turn off a nuclear reactor. I mean, you can do that, but there's costs associated with that. So utilities and sovereign power plants are very much interested in a midterm security of supply, and that's why they go into these long-term offtake contracts.
Okay, perhaps a good way to wrap it up. Mickey, anything else to add on this?
Well, I'm a contrarian, and I think this is a contrarian's time to pick at undervalued companies. We've seen an increase in the spot price this year. We're up 30% from last summer, yet the equities have not followed suit. They've lagged behind. So I'm looking at the, you know, my sweet spot always is domestic U.S. in the Athabasca Basin. I've been on a couple of road shows lately, and we're putting out the idea that maybe it's the time with undervalued, especially the small and mid-tier producers, developers, maybe it's time to pick off a few of those and sit on them and reap the benefits when the spot price and long-term price recover here.
Okay, we'll end it there. Mickey, thanks very much, and we'll reconnect in a couple of weeks.
All right, thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com, and you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.